are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality. Question Reality. With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. This show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide you with tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested in. If you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website, latalkradio.com. Click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. Scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and you click the link. Now, this will take you directly to our archive page, and that is where you can view the list of all of the past guests. Now, our shows are also available for download on iTunes and Stitcher.com under the podcast section. So just go there, type in Question Reality Radio in the search box, and there we are. Now, if you want to find out about our future guest, you have to go to another website, which is our official Question Reality Radio Show website, and that is questionrealityradioshow.com, and that has all of our guests that were on this year and all the way until, gosh, we're booked all the way up until April, and they're just coming in droves. God love them. Oh, boy, I tell you, I got these wonderful fans from all over the world. I don't know how, but as I've told you before, I have such a huge following in Slovenia, of all places. Don't know how it happened, but welcome the Slovenians. Love them. And thank you for those emails. I get at least, five emails a week, and they tell me how much they love the show. So thank you so much. I hope to come to Slovenia one day. Now, as always, every week, we have the most exciting, fantastic, incredible, exciting guest ever. At least I like to think so. And today is another one. We brought another one for your entertainment. His name is Simon Applebaum. Now, isn't that the best name ever? That sounds like it should be marketed. Simon Applebaum. It just sounds like it could be like a preserve. It sounds like it could be a tasty little sweet treat. It's a name that I feel so comfortable with. I'm going to talk to him about possibly marketing a product because that name needs to be marketed. Oh, maybe some apple pie, Applebaum. He is the producer and host of the hit radio show Tomorrow Will Be Televised, and that is on blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So go there now and bookmark it so that you can listen to one of his shows after you listen to him today, of course. Now, we're going to be talking about things like how to book top talent on your radio show for other listeners, because I did get some emails from people who have radio shows who asked me that question, how do you book top talent? And they say they have so many problems trying to get through agents and managers, and they never get return phone calls. So we're going to ask Simon what his secrets are, because he has some of the top talent today, like the upper echelon, the A-list people, they are on his show. So we're going to ask him, how do you get those guys? How do you book them? We're also going to talk to him about the current and future state of television, some trends to watch, smart TVs, ultra HD, multicast channels, video on demand, venture capital, crowdfunding, and incubator. So he has lots of information to share with you. You will be informed. You will be a smarter human after you listen to Simon Applebaum. Now, let me tell you a little bit about him. Simon, who's extremely intelligent, he has been covering the world of television for more than three decades, and he used to hold a position as senior editor at Cable World, Multichannel News, and Cablevision magazines, and currently he is the producer and host, again, of the hit radio show, and it's entitled Tomorrow Will Be Televised, and it's in its seventh year, and it attracts more than 40 million listeners worldwide each month. So he has blasted me out of the water, I think, on the listener. So I got to find out what his secret is. The radio show is about one of my favorite things. Now, everybody who knows me knows, what do I love more than anything? Next to chocolate, it is television. I am a television fanatic. I have like 84 shows that are on the DVR now. Now, I don't get to watch them all, but I record them and then I usually have to delete them. But the point is that I love television, so it is such an honor to have him on the show. And his program airs live Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and noon Pacific Time. And Simon Applebaum also writes, you know, I love that name so much. I think I'm going to say it like five times after I get off the show with him. I love that name, Simon Applebaum. He also writes Tomorrow Will Be Televised columns for various websites like MediaBizBloggers.com and ShellyPalmer.com. And the most exciting news is that a video version of Tomorrow Will Be Televised is under development. So we're going to find out what's going on with that. So let's welcome him, Simon Applebaum. Oh, my God, I couldn't say that more than twice. Simon Applebaum, are you there in New York today?
I am. Good evening, Priscilla. Actually, late afternoon, your time, and right in the evening, my time. I love your enthusiasm and energy. I am just so blown away by where have you been all my life? It's amazing to have you like a guest on my show every week. But I do have one correction, though. It's Blog Talk Radio that gets more than 40 million listens a month worldwide. I get a sliver of that, but it's growing. It's a growing sliver.
Oh, well, that makes
Thanks
me
very
feel
much for having
better.
Me.
That makes me feel better because I thought you alone were getting 40 million. I'm like, wow, how does he do it? I'm not even near 40 million, but, you know, thank you for clearing that up, but I'm sure that...
But you get Slovenia. I haven't gotten Slovenia. I did get a chat room when we had the producer of Spartacus on Star, Stephen S. Tonight. We had a chat room person on our show from Moscow who wanted to know how well you portray women on Spartacus. When that show was on Star the last couple of years, this chat room person said that you portray women very well. What is it about the writers that have you do it? It was really amazing. But you beat me on Slovenia. I'll work on it, though.
Okay, well, I'll have to turn them on to your show so that you can get some emails every week from Slovenia and that they offer to send. I have gotten treats from Slovenia. They send you, they're lovely people. They send you all of these unique treats in the mail. Now, of course, by the time it gets here, it's stale, but I really appreciate the thought and I do try to revive it and eat it. And it's really quite good. So really great, great country. Just the warmest, nicest people ever. Now let's talk about Simon Applebaum, and I'm sorry, I love your name so much. I hope you don't mind me saying the full complete
name. No problem.
Because it's
no
awesome.
Problem whatsoever.
I love that your mother named you Simon Applebaum. I love that this woman named you because I get to say it. Now, when you were a child, we're going to go back way back, when little Simon Applebaum was a child, what did you see yourself doing when you grew up? I wanted to be Wonder Woman. What did you see yourself wanting to be or do?
I wanted to be a performing artist. I went to school at American University in Washington, D.C. I had done acting in musical theater in high school and junior high school, and I wanted to have a role in that world, whether it was as a musical comedy performer or someone who conducted an orchestra. I loved conducting, still still appreciate Leonard Bernstein was my idol at the time. But as I got into school, unfortunately, American University at the time, and this was back in the mid-70s, had the performing arts department in one place, the music department in another, and never the twain met. So, like, for example, we would never do musicals. The performing arts would do musicals at the music department, and the music department would never do musicals, which was one of my favorite things. And as I got going in college, I really enjoyed radio. And I got into the idea of covering, and that was where I first covered television. I used to do a 5-minute commentary every weekday called the Boob Tube Review, 4:40 every weekday afternoon, where I would do commentaries, reviews of shows, the latest news on TV. And that's how my interest in, and I always loved television, I used to watch it so much growing up as a kid. And I went from trying to become a music or performing arts major to being a journalism major. And luckily at the time, AU had a wonderful professor who at the time was the executive producer, of the CBS Evening News, Walter Cronkite, back in the 60s. And we also Lincoln Ferber, who was the original producer of Washington Weekend Review and also later a moderator of that show on PBS in the 70s. And we had wonderful people who would come to see us in school. Luckily at the time, WAMU, which was the AM radio station, not the FM station that's now National Public Radio affiliated with, would be the radio station I could go after school, be a DJ, be a public affairs host of programming like this. But FM, in the journalism department, had 5-minute student newscasts. They were student produced 3 times a day, and I would ultimately be one of the anchors. And that's how I got my love of journalism. And then I had an internship on, at that time, the McNeil-Lehr Report, the predecessor of the NewsHour and currently PBS NewsHour. And that's where I learned how to research a story, how to look for different angles to a situation. To work on one story a day was wonderful with Robert McNeil and Jim Lehrer, where I was based in D.C. And then I really got into, hey, journalism is my career. And as it turned out, the road led to being a trade press journalist covering television. And I've been doing it, covering TV now for 3 decades plus, almost 3 or 3 years.
So way back when you were young, a child or a young adult, and you expressed to your family what your career decisions were going to be, that you wanted to be in entertainment, was your family supportive of your decisions? Are they from an entertainment background? What did they say? What did they think? What did they do?
They loved it. My parents have been very supportive people. Hi, Mom and Dad, if you're listening. They're now in New Jersey, but we all were growing up in Brooklyn, Mill Basin. And the thing was that my parents were incredibly supportive to whatever career direction myself, my brother, my sister took, whether it was my brother's case to assist my father in insurance and my sister's case to be a wonderful parent. They all supported our careers. Nothing was off the table. Nothing was, you can't do this, you can't do that. It was always, you know, go for it, follow your heart, follow your dreams.
Oh, that's wonderful. You're very fortunate. Most parents are like, oh, hell no. Oh, no, you're not. Oh, you're not going into entertainment. You are going to be a lawyer or a doctor or somebody that makes
never, 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 never in my parents' case. Never.
That's wonderful. Now, so you eventually ended up as an editor. Why did you originally choose to accept a position as an editor? What attracted
Well, originally I wanted to see if I could become a radiocaster. And at the time when I graduated in 1978, there was a possibility of a national college radio network, which still, believe it or not, to this day has never been tried. You know, we have college radio stations all over the country, but they've never been interconnected in a national service the way you have with, at that time you had ABC Radio, you had the CBS Radio Network, you had NBC doing services, Mutual Radio was very big at the time. And there was a hope that there would be a college radio network with Brooklyn College as one of the affiliates. And I applied for that. Unfortunately, it never came off. And then I applied to be part of Trade Magazine. I'd seen Trade Magazines all the time, Broadcasting Magazine, other TV Radio Age at the time was there, and I applied for jobs. I even applied for TV Guide doing a magazine called Panorama, which was a consumer magazine about the world of television. And the original publishers of Cablevision, Tisch Publishing out of Denver, had come up with a man called Watch. And I went down to Washington. At that time, the Washington, D.C. office was led by Pat Gushman, the bureau chief there, was next door to C-SPAN, which at that time was, you know, the cable network funded by the cable industry to cover Congress and showcase congressional hearings 24/7. And after the interview, I was able to get the job as a freelance writer for Watch, which was going to be this trade magazine with the same goal as Panorama, cover television's future. And that's how I got my break.
Wow. Well, that seemed like a long story there. My God, you worked your way up. Now, what did you love most about being an editor, and what did you like least about being an editor?
Most was to cover different sides of television. In Watch magazine, my first piece was covering independent sports networks. And I did that because nobody had ever covered some of the syndicators that were into sports programming. Many people remember, may not know this, but many of the great college football games were not covered on network television. They were covered by syndicators like the Mizzou Television Network. College basketball came out of TBS, which is headed by the great Chicago entertainment and sports person Eddie Einhorn. In fact, the New York City Marathon was not originally covered by ABC or NBC or CBS. It was covered in syndication by Marathon Entertainment, formed by a man named Alan Lubell, who was an associate producer at TBS. Bill Mazur, the great New York sportscaster who passed away 2 weeks ago, was the original host of that first-ever marathon coverage in the early 80s. It was assisted by Marla Curry, the ABC track and field analyst at the time. So I felt that, you know, here's a side of television that people don't know about, how they come to be and where it was at. And my first interview was with Vic Piano, who was his brother Claude. How about that for a name, Vic Piano? Vic was the co-founder with his brother Claude of Mizzou. Howard David was Mr. Mizzou announcer at the time. And I had a chance to meet them all, and that was my start. So what I liked about was to cover things like SIN, the first Spanish-language television network, now Univision, to cover Independent Network News, which was the first effort to do a syndicated nightly news program out of WPX here in New York, and shows like that. What I didn't like was sometimes the hours and sometimes having to use a typewriter rather than a computer or, you know, at that time, the modern things. And fax machines were in vogue, and fax machines took hours to file stories. I was in New York. Headquarters were in Denver, and we would take hours, hours, hours to get stories in. But one thing that I also got in that first year was I got a chance to see one of the great TV shows of all time. I went to one of my assignments was to go to NBC near Rockefeller Center and cover their fall season preview. And that was the year that they had shows like Games People Play with Brian Gumbel, Harper Valley PTA with Barbara Eden. And then at the very end, and they showed clips, and they had Brian Gumbel come on, talk a little bit about the show and that kind of thing. And then NBC showed the first episode of Hill Street Blues. And people did not know about this show. They didn't know how a groundbreaker of a show it was, produced and written by Stephen Boschko and Michael Cazal, with Daniel DeGervanti and Veronica Hamlin, and a largely unknown cast, directed by a wonderful man named Robert Butler. And that pilot episode just broke all the rules. Beautifully done, beautifully shot, and when the show ended and the credits were rolling, there was not a peep in the place. It was like everyone was hit by a bomb. And Robert Mulholland, then the president of NBC, went up to the side of the stage, pointed his finger at the screen, and said, "That's a hell of a piece of film." And
sure
you knew that was going to be, that was the show that people were going to talk about, and one way or another, and I said to my editor, Bob Arug, at the time, when I got back to the office, "This is the show that people are going to talk about." And it was, and of course, it's one of the great shows ever made.
Absolutely, for sure. I remember, that's an oldie but a goodie. What characteristics do you feel that it takes to become a successful editor for anyone that's looking to pursue that field?
You have to be inquisitive. You have to have a nose or an eye and an ear for research. You need to really research your subject. I think you got to be willing sometimes to go the extra mile to have a story happen. And if you're, say, an interviewer, as I am, or somebody who you have to really have good subjects. You know, you are only as good, I think, as your subjects in terms of how open they are, the way you make them, the way you you deal with them, to be straight and open and forward. And to stick to your guns and really have guts to, like, you know, this is the story you want to do, and really, and be willing, of course, to take suggestions, be willing to take feedback, be willing to sometimes get criticized, you know, for what you do. But I think the key is, you know, put a good story together, read, research, check out what's going on, and always be inquisitive. You know, always have an open mind. Have the kind of mind that says, you know what, maybe I don't see this trend or I don't see this issue now, but, you know, be open to the fact that things can transform. Things can move on a dime sometimes.
Now, there's so much talk about how, not that I necessarily agree with this, but there's so much talk about that newspapers, physical newspapers and physical magazines are going to eventually go the way of the dinosaur. If you are pursuing a career as an editor, what venues should you be looking for? What places to work? What should, you know, on such as online websites, et cetera, et cetera? What do you recommend that a person should be looking for to be successful in a career as an editor, and what field? Like, where do they go?
First of all, get an internship. If you can get an internship, go. Because that will really... And isn't, you know, we've gone past the days of the gopher type of internship where you go for the coffee, you don't learn much. Nowadays, a lot of internships, you do learn a lot. And you try to learn all sides of a venture, whether it is a newspaper, an online website, any website, or a television enterprise. Learn as much as you can from that. An internship will give that to you. And when you get the internship, really be, you know, as studious as possible. You know, really soak up that knowledge and get involved and watch what people are doing. And then the second thing is to do research. You know, research the opportunities out there. Read the trades. You know, read the newspaper trade press read the entertainment trade press, whether it is Variety or The Hollywood Reporter or Broadcasting Cable or Multichannel News, where I once worked, or websites like Deadline, Hollywood Daily, and The Wrap. The more you understand the workings of an institution, the better you get at being part of the institution.
Absolutely. Now, why are you so interested in having a radio show about television?
I love radio. I love the fact that it's a medium which is personal. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that you have an opportunity in a one-on-one way to be intimate with an audience, to get an audience involved. And I love the fact that with my show, for example, you can have extended conversations with people so that you bring out something about them that maybe the audience doesn't know, whether it's the character of the person, their philosophy, the way they produce or a television show or run a television network or as an entrepreneur launching a new venture. I love that kind of immediacy that you get with radio. And I've always loved radio. You know, I grew up listening to great communicators like Paul Harvey or like a Bill Mazur or some of the great radio, or Lowell Thomas, you know, some of the great radio sports and news, or Marv Albert, you know, who's still a great, you know, radio and television play-by-play caster. Even now, we have Sunday Night Football going on. I will listen to the game on Westwood One, the radio syndicator, as opposed to sometimes watching it on NBC, because I like to see how the audio version differs from the TV version and what they emphasize. I just love radio. I love the fact that you can do all sorts of things with it. I admire the radio stations that do music or do news or do talk or not, whether it's commercial, non-commercial, like National Public Radio, and what's being done with satellite radio with Sirius, and of course what's being done with Blog Talk Radio. It's a wonderful medium which gives you the opportunity to express yourself in a very intimate and fun and in a way, one-on-one way, where you're talking to the audience one-on-one, but you're talking to them as a group.
Well, you and I, who both, as you can tell, I am a radio lover myself, we were very, very fortunate that radio became available to the everyday average person, or at least I was very lucky, because before terrestrial radio stations. That's like for people who don't know what that means, that's like AM, FM radio. So if you wanted to work in radio, you had to go get a job as an intern, or you'd have to apply. And there were only so many spots back in the day or opportunities for you to get on the air if you wanted to be a sportscaster or to have a job on radio. Now, we have internet radio and Sirius radio, and there's so many other different types of ways that the average person who's always wanted to be in or on radio can do that. What are your thoughts on terrestrial radio, as the rumors say that it is on its last leg, and within 10 years, there will be no more terrestrial radio. There will only be internet, Sirius radio, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts on that?
Radio is definitely always going to be around. One reason why is localism. You know, people listen to radio first thing in the morning to find out the news of the day in their area, the traffic, or they want to be entertained by a local personality. Or they want to be informed. And I don't think that's ever going to change. People develop a big bond to terrestrial AM, FM, and public radio. Satellite radio is just getting that bond because of the variety of stations and outlets you can get at one time. Internet radio is a very interesting animal. I think Blog Talk Radio has done a wonderful job to make the ability to produce radio and to have a wide variety of guests every day available. Where I think BTR needs to go is how do we cultivate the audience on a daily basis? You know, when I see radio or radio simulcasts on television, Mike Francesa on Yes here in New York, and I know there are other radio simulcasts, Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN, you know that they're going to get a growing audience. Right now, internet radio in terms of live audience is still touch and go. There are days when I have a lot of people listening to my show live, and there are days when I have few. Same thing with replays of my show. I would love to see Blog Talk Radio do more promotion and publicity for individual shows, but for internet radio as a whole. You know, show up at events where you can showcase internet radio in a great way, or to perhaps encourage advertisers to advertise on radio shows like mine and others. Because I love the fact that with Blog Talk, you can get a wide variety of hosts and also a wide variety of guests. Everybody from President Obama and down has done Blog Talk Radio. Many presidential candidates have. Many people in all walks of life, celebrities in radio and television included, have done Blog Talk, and they love it. They love the ability to be with an audience and have audience feedback by phone calls and by chat rooms.
Absolutely.
So, I think that's what we need right now. And I don't know what LA Talk Radio does, but I think that's important. I think the people behind it have to cultivate the audience. It's not just the host's responsibility. It also should be the responsibility of the outlet.
Exactly. So, I mean, basically, internet radio is tomorrow's talk radio today. And for those of you that are tuning in that don't really listen to internet radio, basically, streaming internet talk radio is becoming the choice of media for just about everyone, professionals and also emerging broadcasters. And this is a growing venue, and it allows anyone, just the average person, to reach the entire world. And unfortunately, internet radio is still in its early growth, and many shows are put on the air that are, you know, not so good. But for the most part, they're simply unengaging, and some of them are boring. So unfortunately, when someone listens to that, they go, oh, you know, internet radio sucks. I'm going to go back to listening to terrestrial radio or AM, FM. But you just have to search and just search different programs. So I want to encourage people to continue doing that. Now, LA Talk Radio has just really, I'm not really familiar with Blog Talk Radio, but I certainly, your show will be the first one that I watch, but I've never actually listened to a show on there. But LA Talk Radio has changed all that, and we bring like really innovative and entertaining talk radio programming on the web, and it's very informative. Most of the shows are really uplifting. They're mostly like in your face, irreverent, but always entertaining, because the person who owns the studio, Sam, he is just an incredible entrepreneur, and he is just a genius with being able to pick people who he really knows will take his station to the next level. And
so that's the same also with Blog Talk. Thanks.
Yeah, oh, is it really?
For example, one of the things that's been wonderful is that they've opened doors to areas that you don't hear discussed on radio. For example, cancer. How do people with cancer live life to the fullest? Well, there's a show on Monday nights called Stupid Cancer Show that does that and showcases how young people are living powerfully in the face of cancer. There's a wonderful show that's on Friday nights now called World Footprints, some of which is taped all around the world. It gives you the ability to hear people and situations in various corners of the globe. There's a woman named Maya who does a show called Fly Lady and Friends, which is Household Hints. So there's a wide variety of source material. There's a and some of these shows have gotten wonderful fan bases that do listen to the show week after week, whether live or on replay. And again, something like Your Venture and Blog Talk are great because it gives a voice on a regular basis to subjects that would not necessarily get covered.
I know. I mean, that's what's great about these internet radio stations is that there's so many different topics. I mean, you can go to one one website and you can find programs on just about everything. So I highly encourage people to really give internet radio a shot and just check it out. Just because you come across one show that may not be interesting or entertaining does not mean that you're not going to find a show on that same station that's not absolutely incredible. So please, 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 please give internet radio a try. Now, do you work full-time as a producer host on your radio show, or is this something you do part-time? Or?
Yeah, every day, this is my deal. Every day I'm on the phone or on the email with potential guests or doing my show or going to covering events that will play into future episodes. You know, it's a full-time gig. You're always on the phone. You're always, you know, researching subjects. You're reading the the websites to cover TV to follow what's going on, what new things are happening, what may be developing into a trend. It's a full-time gig. And as part of that, I also write tomorrow columns for MediaBizBloggers.com, led by a wonderful media analyst and Jack Myers, who I've known for years, and ShellyPalmer.com. Shelly is an entrepreneur who has done work with the National Academy of TV Arts and Sciences in New York. He does a one-minute feature that's syndicated by United Stations Radio Network. And they're two wonderful people to work with. And the nice thing about all of that is I get a chance to do a show, which I love, or columns I love, and I'm never censored. You know, people trust what I do, and I try when sometimes I deal with sensitive subjects to cover them in a sensitive way that is family friendly.
Absolutely. I for people who want to or thinking about possibly doing an internet radio show, it really depends on who you go with, but usually, like, for example, LA Talk Radio, we pay an hourly fee to have a show, and you can either choose to have advertisers or you don't have to have advertisers. And what's great about LA Talk Radio is that they don't have any contracts. They don't make you sign contracts. So for people who are looking to do a radio show, there are certain internet radio stations that will make you sign a contract and they'll say you have to get this amount of advertisers, et cetera, et cetera. So I just feel very, very lucky to be at LA Talk Radio that you don't have to do that, because sometimes I feel like I have advertisers, sometimes I don't. But what's great about it is that if you do get advertisers, you can get them and charge them, and you can cover the cost that you pay to have your internet radio show. Because I know a lot of people say, oh, I wish I had my own show, but it costs so much an hour, I can't afford it. But that's how you would be able to do that. Now, my question to you is, do you have a staff to obtain advertisers? Do you do it yourself? What are your methods to get advertisers? Tell people some tips in case they're thinking about, you know, starting their own show. What would they do to offset the cost of having a radio show on internet?
Well, I don't have advertisers. I don't, unfortunately, have an agent that does it. I did at one point have a company. There was a company I worked with called Sonobite that we were doing the podcast through, and they were trying to get advertising for the podcast versus show, which I would then split the revenue 50-50. Sad to say, Sonobite, which was a terrific company to work with, could not get going, and unfortunately, over a year ago, folded. I wish the Blog Talk Radio would find a way to sell advertising again for all of their shows, and that we would be able to take the revenue. What happens is that BTR does sell advertising on the homepage of my show, and I do get a cut of that revenue. If there was a way that we could get some sort of representation for internet radio in the ad community, that would be great. And
are you
through Blog Talk Radio, or maybe through a consortium of various entities, whether it's Clear Channel or LA Talk Radio? Or there's some companies I know they're doing podcasts like Podcast One and TV Talk Network. If we could find a way to sort of unite all the parties so that they could, let's say, make buys with the likes. I would love to have sponsors like a Geico or Liberty Mutual or General Foods or Kraft or Firestone or whatever on a regular basis.
Are you able to bring
everybody together, that would be a great way to do it.
Are you allowed, doing a show for Blog Talk Radio, are you allowed to get your own advertisers to bring whoever you want on your show to advertise, or do they monitor that?
Yes, I'm allowed, if I can get advertising support, to have it on. However, right now, I can't put audio ads on the show. So the advertising can't be a 30-second spot, but I can, let's say, in the manner of classic radio, you know, voice the commercial myself.
I see.
What Paul Harvey used to do all the time.
Yeah.
He would page two and then do an ad for Walmart or Citrical or some of the other sponsors he worked with, General Life. And I'd be fine doing the same thing.
You know,
if it brings the revenue in, that'd be marvelous.
And if
it's away from Africa, and we do say this on the air, that if you're involved with a national advertiser or know someone who is, contact me. Let's do business.
Absolutely. Me too. Simon and I want you to advertise. We have millions of listeners. I mean, my God, there are so many people that listen to our shows. Why would someone not advertise? Only the smart companies are actually participating in advertising on internet radio shows. The people that are really staying up with the trends, because I do know that a lot of radio shows on the internet are getting bigger advertising, like CBS, et cetera, the news. So it is happening, but you need to go out there and actively market them, because they basically
that the Radio Advertising Bureau would take a role in this too.
Yeah.
They represent radio, and I think it'd be great for them and maybe some of the other ad bureaus, like the Cable Television Advertising Bureau or TVB or IAB, the Interactive Ad Bureau that does work with internet, with the web. Maybe we can do a joint venture with the trade bureaus, and perhaps that could help in a radio along.
Yeah, because one of the things that I find when my assistant calls to approach advertisers, the first thing when you're dealing with a person on the business side, they say, well, send us your ratings. And they don't understand that you don't have ratings. You know, it's not traditional ratings. It's not monitored like that. Eventually, I don't know if they're internet ready, will be monitored and we'll be able to show a report, but we're not able to do that. So people on the business side don't want to spend advertising dollars if they can't see in black and white what the ratings are. They want a rating chart of some sort. So unfortunately, they're still stuck in that old-fashioned mentality, and there's no way to show that. So we lose a lot of business because of that. A lot of advertisers don't want to risk it and pay money for that. But hopefully, someone will think of a way to do that. So now recently you had, I want to bring this up because when I was checking your website out, I nearly lost my mind, Simon. Recently, you had one of the writers, co-executive producers of two of my favorite shows in the world. Like, I would die if these shows weren't on. The Vampire Diaries and The Originals. You had Mr. Michael Narducci on your show. And what advice would you give other talk show hosts who want to have the caliber of talent that you have on your show, such as, like, what is the best way to book the upper echelon of the entertainment industry on their radio show?
Two things off the bat, Priscilla. First of all, you have to be up to speed on the news of an industry like television. One way you do it is you read the web trades, like broadcasting and cable, multi-channel news, Variety. Deadline Hollywood Daily is marvelous. What Nikki Fink and her people do with that site, Nelly Andiva, who is the TV reporter for Deadline, is one of the best in the business. She breaks scoops left and right every day. Rap, Sharon Waxman, her gang, do a terrific job. Also, read PR Newswire and Business Wire. They come out with the releases every day on television, as well as general entertainment. And it's important that you note that at the end of those releases, you get the PR contact. You usually get an email, you get a phone number, and you get a name. Take them down. Second thing is get yourself known with the public relations people at the various networks, whether it's ABC, CBS, ESPN, CW. In the case of CW, I go every year to what they call their upfront. That's when the networks showcase what's coming up in the fall season. So I go there every year. I get to know the PR people face-to-face. I have requested, by the way, it's very interesting. We have tried to get a lot of people from the CW on the show, and it's been tough and go for many of their shows. But luckily, we got Michael from the originals and Vampire Diaries. I did not know he did Vampire Diaries beforehand, and that helped me in terms of preparing the interview. But the other thing that hit me was I also read Wikipedia, and I also Yahoo and Google stuff. And one of the things I did not know about the originals is it is a program where all the scripts are co-written by men and women, which is very, very rare for a television series. So that was the basis of a question, and Michael was great to answer it. Read press releases, take down the information about who the contacts are, get to know the networks, call them up. Also, many networks have their own websites. ABC is ABC MediaNet, which also covers Disney Channel, ABC Family, Disney Junior, Disney XD, CBS covers Showtime, CW has their own release, ESPN is MediaZone. Most of the major networks have their own press site, and they should have contacts and email phone numbers for those people, many of whom are based in either New York or Los Angeles.
Yeah, and you just call them up and just do your pitch. Write a little pitch out. Feel confident in the pitch. Promote your show. Tell them about previous guests that you've had on that might be someone that they would be interested in. Then tell them that we have worldwide listeners. And, for example, LA Talk Radio has won 2 Frontier 50 awards, which is from Talkers Magazine. So you got to, like, bring something up that's impressive about the particular station that you're doing.
Yeah, you really want to highlight yourself when you do emails or phone calls. Let them folks know, hey, we're in such, we're on BTR. BTR attracts 40 million listeners worldwide. Here's some of our previous guests. You list like 5 or 6 of your guests. You try to balance it out so it's producers, it's network executives, it's technology people, so they get a good range of who you've talked to. And, and invite them to call or email you if you have any questions. Give them available dates. Let them know when your show is live. One thing I do not do, I do not give people specific questions in advance. That's a personal policy because
it
restricts you in terms of being topical. Right. You want to be improvisational. You want people to react to what's going on if an event breaks that morning. So as a rule, I don't give people specific questions. I will give them topics, like the general topic. That's fine. But specifics, no.
I agree 100%. And a lot of times when you're dealing with when I personally call agents or managers, it's like really hard to get the stars. But they say, we want you to send over your questions, and then they want to approve them, and then it's a lot of red tape you have to go through. So you have to decide whether or not that appeals to you or not. I usually say, why don't you send the questions? But then I don't want to get into a situation where I'm doing like a Leno or Letterman, where they're looking at the cue cards and asking the same old dull, boring questions. So I don't really particularly care for that. So I kind of like to do, like you said, do everything improv for sure. Now, in your opinion, the various ways, I want your opinion on with the various ways that you watch programs these days. People watch Hulu and YouTube and Netflix. What do you feel is the current and future state of television?
I think television is headed for an incredible outbreak of scripted TV, scripted dramas, scripted comedies, sketch comedy, things like animation, things like that. If you're a television producer, this is the best time you have had ever to get a show on the air because so many networks are now doing scripted television. So many new networks are doing scripted TV for the first time, whether it is Hallmark Channel with Cedar Cove or History Channel with Vikings or Sundance Channel with Rectify or Oprah Winfrey's network with the Tyler Perry shows, Have and the Have-Nots and Love Thy Neighbor. In the year ahead, we've got Discovery Channel, E!, Bravo, WeTV, National Geographic Channel are all getting into El Rey, Robert Rodriguez's network, are all getting to scripted TV. So you have that happening. You have Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, which is breaking out shows this month, getting in. I have to say, what Netflix has done in this year has been incredible. When you think about the fact they've introduced five shows, 3 of them were Emmy nominated, House of Cards, Arrested Development, Hemlock Grove. House of Cards won 3 Emmys, including Best Director for David Fincher. Orange is the New Black is one of the most acclaimed shows of the year. If Netflix had released that show, Priscilla, a month or two early, mm-hmm. we would have seen them win the Best Emmy for Best Comedy. Mm-hmm. I think they would have won Best Dunk. And Derek also with Ricky Gervais. They've got more on the fire. They're going to double their original promo investment next year. They want to get into made-for-TV movies, maybe movies that run simultaneously in theaters and on their service. Hulu now is new president Mike Hopkins from Fox. I think they're going to pursue more original shows. Amazon, of course, now getting into it big time. And who knows, and Xbox is coming out November 22nd. They're getting into original scripted shows under Nancy Tellum, the former CBS exec. So that's a big thing. You're seeing more Hollywood production talent get into writing, doing television, whether it's producers or writers, directors like Guillermo del Toro or Michael Bay, who's doing the pirate drama Black Star is on Showtime in January. So that whole talent pool is coming together. Steve McQueen, by the way, who did the movie 12 Years a Slave, which probably will be a surefire Oscar nominee for Best Picture. He is now working on a series for HBO that is getting fast-tracked to be produced here in New York, possibly on the air next year. And then on top of that, you have more ways to get a show funded through crowdfunding and very soon equity crowdfunding. So you've got so many ways to get a show produced, so many networks you can do it with, and that's just scripted, of course. Yeah. So I think that's something. And also, on top of all that, you got the smart TV set, which allows you to develop applications specifically for TVs like you would for a smartphone or a tablet. You can watch the web on television, and I think that's going to be fascinating to see how websites adapt to that environment, plus watch your favorite shows and networks. And the capabilities and how you can control the set is only going to get better as time goes on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What are the trends to watch for as far as smart TVs, ultra HD, multicast channels, and the video on demand?
Let me take one at a time. Smart TVs, about a quarter of all television households now have it. They may not know they have it, but they have it. Where, again, you can watch your favorite shows, the networks, the web, not just web videos, the web, and original interactive apps. And you can control what you see on the set through your voice, through your remote control, through your smartphone or tablet. You can download an app from either one, put it on the TV set, and then your smartphone serves as the remote control. I think Ultra HD is the next level for high-definition TV. Many of the smart TV sets that are now in the marketplace include Ultra HD capability. I think we're going to see video on demand make a comeback. It's always been the medium that, frankly, has not been covered enough by the media, sort of as the prodigal son. But it looks like, thanks to the fact that many broadcast and cable shows, now you can get VOD on cable and satellite, and 60% of the nation has VOD capability, I think it's going to be big. I think we're going to see video chat a la Skype happen through smart TV sets. I think that could turn into a very personal medium, whether it's anything from, I think ticketing is be possible. There's also commerce opportunities. LG smart TV sets have PayPal, and I think that's going to lead to a lot of ways people can go beyond Home Shopping Network or QVC to buy and sell merchandise. And sky's the limit as far as what can be done with it. We may see home banking. We still may see home security on the television set, the ability to monitor your appliances, put a calendar of your daybook, let's say, on the TV set. Comcast is looking at that with their X1, X2 platform. Do Facebook and Twitter on the TV. Like I said, sky's them in terms of how imaginative people are.
What do you mean when you say getting the next generation of TV off the ground in regards to, say, venture capital, crowdfunding, and what the heck are incubators?
Sure. Well, I really believe that there's so many people where you are, where I am, and in between, who want to get the next generation of TV going, whether it is smart TV applications, new television networks, new television programming, services we haven't imagined yet on the TV set. And there are two big ways, I think, that they can get investment in that. It costs money to get these ventures going. And right now you have a medium known as venture capital and angel investors, and you have in the last few years what's known as incubators, companies like 500 Startups, Y Combinator, Techstars, General Assembly, and others that not only allow the opportunity to incubate companies, but to mentor them, coach them in having great business plans, avoiding the pitfalls that can make or break a venture. That's a new phenomenon. And the problem I see is that VCs and angels and so forth have done a wonderful job funding the Internet. The Internet would not be where it is, Priscilla, including things like this, without venture capital and angels. The same thing with smartphone applications. The same thing with tablets. But when it comes to television, with rare exceptions, the attitude among this whole ecosystem of fraternity is, we don't care, we don't give a damn, we'll make up all sorts of excuses why we won't do it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's despite the fact that some do it. Networks like Nuvo TV, TV One, what is now known as CBS Sports Network, the company that did technology of video on demand, some of the video on demand services like Healthy Nation, all got VC money as startups, or angel investors as startups. And yet, the majority of the industry does not care. And I think that's something that has to transform. Because, and I think part of it has to be that the TV industry has got to, as a unit, knock on the doors of these people, knock the doors and say, folks, you know what? You're off on a terrible track. It's time to transform your thinking. Get off your butt and start fighting these folks. They want to create jobs. They want to bring the next generation of TV to all of us. And don't dismiss them out of hand simply because you have attitudes that, frankly, don't make sense.
Absolutely.
When it comes to crowdfunding, you now have the ability to fund individual shows through Kickstarter, through Indiegogo. There's a website called Mobcaster that actually helps get television pilots funded. Kickstarter, of course, crowdfunding is make a one-time donation. If the company raises a certain amount of money within 60 or 90 days, you make that donation. If not, you don't. And now we have another level of this called equity crowdfunding, which was part of the Jobs Act passed by President Obama over 2 years ago, where you can invest in the life of a venture. About a week and a half ago, the Securities and Exchange Commission finally came out with the rules of the road. They've been working on it for so long because they want to avoid scams. They want to avoid ripoffs, because if we have a big ripoff, forget about it. The whole house comes down. But they now have the rules of the road. It's in a period now in Washington, D.C., where they're inviting public feedback, and hopefully early next year they will approve these rules. And that will open up the door for a lot of people who want to maybe get a new television venture, seed funding at least, or a new television program or a smart TV app off the ground. I think if it does, it's going to be a major, major deal for television. And there already are firms that are equity crowdfunding agencies that are already talking to production companies and TV possibilities about, once these rules are approved, making them happen.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? Guess what, Simon? We are already 2 minutes over. Can you believe it?
Oh, man.
Unbelievable. That means only one thing can happen. You have to come back next year on my show.
I would love to, Priscilla. Why do we wait till next year? Make it sooner.
Well, unfortunately, I'm booked till April. So email me after we get off the show and go to my website, questionrealityradioshow.com, and look on the schedule and pick a date. And let's get you booked, because I can't wait to have you back. We didn't even get to cover the other 10 questions that I had for you. Bummer, bummer. Hey, but listen, everybody out there, check out Simon Applebaum's show. He is on blogtalkradio.com/televised. Listen to his show. He has the top people in the business. Also, he writes a column for mediabizbloggers.com, shellypalmer.com, and he's also going to have some episode podcasts, and they'll be available at iTunes.com.
And we're on Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon, the West Coast. Listen to us live. Call in, and also use our chat room, SimonApple04. We would love to have you be part. We also do a trivia question every week, where if you answer it on Monday, we pose the question Monday, you answer it, first one the correct answer, we highlight you on Friday. That's a great deal.
That's it. Listen to Simon Applebaum. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I'm losing my mind. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Oh, not next week, because that's my birthday party. We're going to see you the week after, because I'll have a hangover from Wild Turkey Whiskey on Sunday. So tune in the next week for my show. Thank you, Simon Applebaum, and we'll see you next week on
Question Reality. Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality. Question Reality. With Priscilla Leona. Only on LA Talk Radio.